Welcome to the Coffee Cast with Stephen Hayward of Project X. Hopefully over a good cup of coffee, we're going to have a great conversation. So please join us to welcome this week's guest on the Coffee Cast. Welcome to this week's episode of the Coffee Cast with Steve Hayward of Project X. Here just before the Labor Day weekend pre-recording for Tuesday's session or episode with Michael Ianni-Polarchio. Thanks, Mip, for coming back.
Hi, everybody. Nice to be back.
Yeah, so it's been a rough summer of trying to find people to be able to stick to their guns and be on the Coffee Cast. And
you had to dip into your second string here.
I had lunch with Mip talking about some things, and as we were finished, and it was a very fast lunch, I said, Coffee Cast? So he said yes. So thanks, Mip.
No problem. But,
I love it. Mip and I were just joking about driving traffic to our each of our podcasts, and Mip and I were joking, or Mip was joking, that we should start swearing in them so that we get, what did you say again?
We would we'd get an explicit tag in iTunes, and then everybody would come and listen to our shows. It's driving. Actually, so I'll give you an interesting thing now in and around this concept. You know, I've been talking a lot about video and YouTube, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And there's some people who've been putting out some pretty good shows, but what they figured out is the thumbnail that gets generated by YouTube is always generated by the frame of video that's dead center in your video cast. It picks the halfway point, takes that snapshot, and makes that your thumbnail. So you've got people that are doing entire shows, and at the halfway mark, they'll put something like something from Sports Illustrated Swimsuit Edition, right, of some girl in a bikini, and then they take it away and they keep going. So then the thumbnail is this sort of scantily dressed.
So like they do that afterwards in their post-production, they go and they find the exact middle point and go, put this picture in there in my stream.
Yeah. And then
you'd never notice it while you're watching it, because it would just be one image in a 30 frame per second or 50 frame per second.
It's always visible. It's always visible. The thing is, they suck in people to go watch the show because people are like, oh, well, where's the chick, right?
Which is funny, because one of the challenges with both video and audio casting is that to actually know what the content is, you need to actually listen to the content.
Yeah, you know, I've been evaluating YouTube and Google and Blip. And the interesting thing Google does is you can see thumbnails of the timeline of the video cast. So if you want, you could click on the 3-minute mark or the 5-minute mark and just jump forward to some stuff that looks interesting. But you're right, yeah, you never know until you're done, right?
Anyway, so Mip and I came up with the idea that today's conversation would be around working with vendors and technology, and you know, some of our experiences of dealing with technology issues and how those vendors interact with you and things like that. And as you know, for Project X, it's a very important thing for us to understand vendor relations, as we have our sourcing strategy stuff that we do, as well as we've got customers. And so it's always good to have conversations around those sort of ideas. And so Mip, thanks for joining me.
Yeah.
But you had, as a preamble, a great starting point example with blog lines. Your personal example of, I said Bloglines is an RSS reader. If you're somehow just got off the boat yesterday and you're listening to podcasts and you don't know what
an RSS reader is.
But, and it's probably the most popular one, I would say, out there. At least it would be probably top three.
It's probably the top three.
Yeah. So it's one I use. And
I use it as well. And I ranted in a post, I think earlier this week, that for me it's broken in the sense that anything I've kept new, which is basically the equivalent of saving an article you want to see again later.
Yeah, a little checkbox you set.
Yeah.
Say please don't delete it.
They're indicating when I go back and look at all my feeds that I've got, say, 22 items checked off and still available to me. But when I click it, all I see is the new. And all that stuff, and I've invested a lot of sort of time and energy into keeping stuff almost filed away inside of blog lines, right?
Yeah.
That now I'm frustrated to the point where I want to leave it, but at the same time I still want to get the content. And I tried to extract my my list of feeds, which you can do quite easily. But as soon as you bring it into another reader, it's all new again, right?
Yeah.
So you end up getting hundreds and hundreds of...
Well, you probably won't get the full site stuff, which is you'll probably get some, like, say, last 10 or 20 or whatever
right.
it would be.
Right.
But if you're like me, I've got stuff from almost a year ago...
Yeah, same with me.
...that I use to reference, because there are articles like... I love reading Claudia Imhoff stuff and another guy, Dan Lindstedt, in the U.S. And if I read one of their articles, I just... leave it there so that I can easily go to it. I don't have to go and go to their blog and figure it all out. It's
yep.
really brilliant.
I think what's driving me crazy as well is there's no indication from blog lines of what they're doing to fix the problem. Like, it's been like this for me. It's got to at least been a month now.
Well, I know you actually did a post the other day on it, and you'd actually said in your post that you'd actually asked them, and they'd said, well, there was a problem with some update or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, that's what they said.
Again,
that's what they posted on their blog once.
But they still haven't resolved it for you. And I said, because I responded to your post and said, I haven't had any issues like that. And someone else said that they'd also
yeah.
had an issue.
Yeah. So I can't, it's not, I did think it was me at one point, especially when you had said you weren't having any issues.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's wider spread.
Anyway, so here's the stepping into the topic. Here is a case of how do you handle that and not lose a customer. And this is a good little microcosm case study of communication, you know, and as
yep.
Mark Diamond, who's been on this talking about project management and program management, has said many times, all of this stuff is all around communication.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think if we start to look at broader, like working with vendors, and I've had the benefit of being on both sides, right, where I've been providing a service
mm-hmm.
and on the other side where I'm procuring and consuming a service, it's all around being transparent. It's all around communicating and keeping setting expectations.
Mm-hmm.
Even as I always say to people when I'm on the customer side, people are working with vendors and they get mad at vendors. I always say that you play an active role in making that a successful relationship, right?
Mm-hmm.
Working with the vendor. So you need to communicate clearly what your expectations are, and the vendor's responsibility is to communicate clearly whether those expectations can be met or if not. How, you know, not that you just sort of stay in a black box and then you surprise. Nobody likes surprises,
no.
right?
No, and, you know, in some cases, usually the surprises are most relevant in cost and personal impact around things. So, you know, with us, when we're dealing with subcontractors, a big thing for us, where we're dealing with vendors of our own,
yep.
you know, one of the things we have is a very explicit contract, and there's bunch of people that have come to us and said, oh no, that's okay, just a handshake or whatever. I go, no.
Yep.
The reason I do this is that, and we'll walk through it as fast or slow as you want to make sure it's explicit that there's no surprises, because if I pay you in 15 days or 30 days or 50 days or 60 days and it's a surprise, you'll get pissed off.
Right.
And so what we want to do is make it so that there's, as you say, no surprises in the whole thing. We're not going to cover it all.
Yeah.
But let's make sure we cover the base things, the care and feeding stuff, and just start managing those expectations. So
yeah.
it's a challenge.
So the interesting thing is why it's about communicating. So why on either end of the equation, whether you're on that customer side or the vendor side,
mm-hmm.
what prohibits one or both of the parties from communicating?
Well, I'd add sometimes it's just time.
Yep.
Right? Communication and doing proper communication takes time, and especially early on, it takes a lot more time than you really want to spend
mm-hmm.
when you're asking. So if you've asked a vendor, an outsource vendor, to come in and take over something, you're expecting that you can extract yourself from that,
yep.
which is the opposite, right? That whole transition period, you actually have to spend more time on it, and
yeah.
you still have your day job and all that other stuff, so it doesn't go away, but you need to build that proper rapport that will help you when you get through the bad get to the bad times, because there will always be times when there's a confusion or a disappointment. It's just the nature of it. Happens on both sides.
Yeah.
So I think there's that time issue. Another one is people don't necessarily get trained on how to deal with those sort of things. So, as an example, one of our clients is a major telco.
Yeah.
And everybody that works there, completely understands how to work with outsourced and third-party vendors because that's their model.
Mm-hmm.
Another client we had, they were the opposite. They were trying to do that, but they had no one that had an understanding about what that meant. And so you had their contracts people trying to add things in to try and cover off for that. But ultimately, when you outsource something, there's still a lot of structure that you need to keep in-house. And, you know, so you need to have governance and stewardship, but as well, responsibility for the technical design.
Yeah.
You know, because, so offshoring, perfect example of the extreme of it, because the people are so far away, you know, they're going to build you exactly what was in that design document. That design document was built off of a requirements document.
Right.
So in each of those cases, if there's a disconnect and both sides aren't taking full responsibility of what's in there, then you're pretty much guaranteed you're not going to get what you want.
Yep.
Because you can't just go and the person's not working down the hall and you can't have a, like a coffee meet. You know, you run into them and they said, oh, I was running into this problem. I was trying to figure out, do I do it this way or do I do it that way? You know, that creates a very big communication issue. And that has nothing to do with language or style or anything. It just, so, you know, I remember in a project that I was involved with at a bank, we did a post-mortem, and it truly was a post-mortem on a failed project, right? What happened was, early on, the client and the vendor both thought it was a small project.
Okay.
So they didn't put a lot of governance and stuff around it. Well, the project turned into a...
a big project.
Not a big project, but a, bigger than
either
what
of them
was.
Thought.
And neither of them... I don't think it was about whether anybody... No one was wrong, but no one communicated the fact that it was really a lot bigger and realized we need to deal with that. So there was issues around the business sponsor, who would have been fine when it was a small project, really didn't have the authority to make the decisions that they were having
big
to make
project, yeah.
And the input. And then at the same time, both management teams within the IT side really weren't properly supported. I think might be the right way to be able to do it. So it was not really about could you build whatever was on the spec or do whatever. So the client had this really smart guy went and actually did this math, and he said, if you missed the requirements by 10 or 15%, then you go into design, take that 10 or 15% miss, and once again you add another 10 or 15% at that point.
Yeah.
And then, so we're now, I can't remember, let's say it's 30% off.
Yeah.
Then you go into development, and mistakes, bugs, whatever you want to call them, exist. Call it 10% miss. So you're now at 40% off, and then because you had bad requirements and bad design, or inappropriate, not bad is not the right word, you go into your testing. Well, your testing is based on those requirements, if it's done properly.
Yeah.
Now and now you've just missed. So, you know, he did the math, and the way he did it, it ended up that you had a 70% chance that there was nothing applicable to what your original requirement was or should have been. So, and at every stage, the vendor could go and say, but you signed off on the requirements document. You signed off on the design document. And you did. And, you know, so if you start dealing with CMM level 5 companies, they're huge, huge documentation. Where words versus pictures versus consensus, right? Like, so I know you and I, from a style point of view, are get a whiteboard, you know, solution out based on the stuff so that we can kind of visualize it, and then we'll write words around trying to describe it, but we'll still capture the picture.
Right. I think that the dimension that we bring when we've worked together in the past, we've done some work at a major telco where we did that very thing where we used whiteboards and mm-hmm. process flows. Part of my level of communication when I was on the vendor side is to involve the client
mm-hmm.
in creating the deliverable ultimately, right? Because then it's hard to miscommunicate, misunderstand, because you're there at the point and you're having a dialogue, right?
Yeah. And if they don't understand the technology, you're hopefully helping them somewhat understand it, right?
And if they don't understand the business, they're hopefully catching it at that point, saying, no, you didn't really understand how we do this or that. And then you're not having to work at communicating. The engagement itself. See, sometimes when you look at, like, you know, you do the project planning for an engagement.
Yep.
You build in stuff like communications, and you build in, you know, we need 20% of this resource and your resource. And instead of having a project that those things are elements.
Yep.
I like to take the project and say the project is the act of communicating together around solving this problem, right? And it kind of gets that whole idea around delivering value and not delivering deliverables.
Yeah. And so, I mean, this is just, you know, so our topic's about dealing with vendors, and this is a, you know, this whole thing is around trying to create that synergy, not the us versus them scenario.
Right, right.
And it always, you know, there's always going to be an us versus them because you're two different organizations. It doesn't matter how good or best way people are going to think. Ultimately, the corporation that's the vendor has rules that they have to try and live by. And so if you can create that respect quadrant, then you're okay. And the challenge is, even within your business customer, if your customer is IT, they still have a customer which is business.
Right.
So you're going to have multiple different things. And I remember on one of those projects that you're talking about, we were brought in by one person within IT, but their customer was another customer within IT who then reported to the business. And there was a couple cases where they were wanting to do things that were not really apropos with what we were engaged to do. And it created a very difficult situation as to how do you deal with that. Because the person who had hired us, brought us in, and was paying us,
yep,
was really outside the process. And so how do you re-engage them without making that person think like you're going around them? But at the same time, you need to have them know, because they're the ones who hired you and did all that other stuff. And it caused I don't think I handled it exactly right, because it caused some issues, but I handled it with the way I thought was the right way at that time.
Yeah. Yeah, I think if you're looking at, like, building good relations with vendors. So when I was on the consulting side delivering service with a particular client, one of the early on engagements, it was a small engagement, the outcome of my deliverable basically advised the client to do such and such, which meant that our organization would actually lose money,
mm-hmm,
because there'd be less of us to be doing a particular set of activities inside this client.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember it caused quite an uproar inside my organization, and I basically said, A, the facts that are yielded are the facts, so we don't change those.
Yeah.
Two, I guarantee you that we will, the client will respect us more and trust us and come back to us. And it spawned 2 years of projects with this client while I was there, and 3 years of projects with this client after I left, right? And why? Because he trusted what I had to tell him, right? I think, you know that you've got you're successfully working with vendors, or as a vendor, you know you're working successfully with your customer when they stop looking at you as a vendor. They just treat you as part of their team, right?
And that takes time. So when we talked about time before, it takes time, a proven, trusted advisor, you know, David Meister type stuff, to get you to that stage of being. You can't go and say, hey, you know what, MIP, you're a customer, I want you to think of me as a trusted advisor, and have it all of a sudden show up.
Right.
You know, it's deeds and actions and respect, yeah, and all that other stuff.
But you're right, it takes time, right? So it's not a quick fix where on both ends, where a customer can't just say, let's get the vendor and get a quick fix. Sometimes, I mean, that's what's needed if it's something, whatever. There'll always be projects or engagements where it's just you bring someone in on a one-off basis, right? But if it's something that is of a strategic nature that will start to yield medium and longer-term value, then there is no quick fix from the customer's perspective, but also from the vendor, because you work with some vendors who they're always looking to upsell you, right? So you're not always sure whether, like,
are they creating a project for them to be able to have a project, or are they
exactly,
actually, is this the right strategy for me?
Right, right. And you can sniff that out pretty easy. That's what I think.
Yeah. So, you know, we talked about the vendor side, and we talked a little bit about the customer side, but one of the things that I've seen, especially with dealing with larger or medium-sized outsourcing engagements and vendors and technology that the customer quite often takes for granted or neglects their responsibility of their participation in that.
Yep. Yep. That's why I'm saying it's got to be an investment on both ends, right? You have to have a... You can't have a... This gets back to if it's communication or relationships.
Mm-hmm.
A husband and wife relationship. I think one of us have blogged about this at some point. It's not. It can't be one-sided. Otherwise, the marriage falls apart. And that's the same thing with vendors and their clients, right? If it isn't two-way street, then it's hard to build a relationship. And you always do have that us against them type of thing, as opposed to one team, whether it be one initiative a year or whether it be 10 initiatives a year, right? Yeah, I agree with that.
And other interesting thing I've found, just from a historical point of view, is that when you run into a problem, which they do happen, and we all need to be prepared that they're going to happen and the frustrations that go with them, if everybody has that, you know, a little bit of that early communication, a little bit of that built-up trust, whether it gets shot down as this problem occurs, but if you go at solving the problem the right way, your relationship coming from a problem to resolution is stronger than if you just went through normal course, everything's moving smoothly.
Right.
You know, the number of cases, the just because of you're forced to have to spend time together to resolve it, that all of a sudden, the stuff that you were, you know, people generally don't share or whatever, all of them becomes transparent as you're trying to work out that problem, and boom, the trust, the knowledge. Now, the flip side is if you try and solve those problems in a vacuum and say, here's my solution, and you're not including the client through that whole process,
right,
it will actually has a chance of really hurting the relationship.
Yep. Because A, they don't understand it. B, maybe they do understand it, but the vendor hasn't understood because it's been created in a vacuum. So you have this total disconnect after, right?
Yeah.
Either it's perfect, but the client doesn't understand it, so miscommunication, or it's way off, and the vendor doesn't understand that it's way off, and so then you get into this whole...
I was talking to someone recently, and they were telling me this story about going to a vendor for some technology, and they brought them in and said, look, I want to move. I think they said they were moving to IP, and they said, you know, come and look at this and tell me what you think, and I want to move to this. And their answer was, well, here's how I upgrade your switch to just make it work better with its current technology. And they're going, No, I asked about how do I move to this. I didn't ask about how I add 6 more phones to my whatever.
Yeah.
I had another case way long time ago, which was absolutely mind-boggling. I went in to go buy a new car, into Chrysler to go buy a new car, because I had a Jeep Cherokee at the time, and I wanted to buy a brand new Grand Cherokee. And I went in to the dealership, and a young guy was looking after me, and he asked me some questions, which I respected. He wanted to know, you know, what do I do? How do I use the car and all that other stuff? And I said, well, you know, here's what I do. Here's how I use the car. And I put a lot of kilometers on a car every year. And his response to me was, you shouldn't buy this. You should go buy a Neon.
Totally different.
I'm going, we're talking like a little small four-seater tiny car versus the SUV, and I went, no, I wanted to buy this. I wanted to ask whether the rear window flips up, and you're telling me I need to go buy a different car. So, you know, in all situations, we need to be open to understanding and listening.
Yep.
And one of the best, you know, things, and Jim reminded me about this the other day, and talking about some pursuits that we're doing right now. The best success I've ever had in working with a client to solve a problem, each component, as you're building up the resolution, you talk to the client about that component and say, look, you know, here's what we're thinking about doing. Does this kind of make some sense to you?
Yeah.
And then boom. So that when you actually finally come up with your final proposal, and this is if it's a fixed price contract, and the only thing they haven't seen was the total price of having it all mashed together.
Right.
They've actually seen every component. They've actually helped you build it because you've been playing, well, no, does this work for you? No, it doesn't. Is this there? And the same thing goes with a project. If you're doing requirements and design, and where this came for me was that one of our clients asked us about how we could help him deal with the fact that on a small project, at the end of design, when he does sign-off, he can't afford to have to change design because he has no time to make any modifications.
Yeah.
So he wanted to talk about how do I solve that and resolve that problem. And so our resolution, one of our thoughts was to follow that same methodology of, as it's being built, you're largely not necessarily signing off. It's not about signing off. It's not about traceability or whatever. It's about the end of design, having the right designed widget to get there. And it really changes the game. And as you said, you know, if you can change it from being us versus them, even though ultimately underlying it's us versus them, really changes the game, and it makes it a lot more fun and a lot more interesting. I know
ultimately a lot more value, right?
Yeah, when I watch Graham deliver the things that he delivers, it's just amazing to watch because he's all about visibility, and he'll tell you his opinion whether it's going to
make you mad or not, right?
Yeah.
Because so, in a way, in the end, when you walk away and you reflect, it's the truth, and that's what you want to hear, right? You don't want stuff sugar-coated, and then after, the coating always comes off when the cereal's in the milk, right?
Yeah.
And then you're basically eating dog food. So it's important, I think, always to be upfront and transparent. So yeah, it's a good philosophy.
So going back to blog lines, going back to a lot of other technology problems, so with all the battery recalls on technology on laptops,
yep.
How well that's handled. You go back to the old Tylenol example of how that recall due to some bad Tylenol, what that means versus the other ways that people deal with it and the repercussions. Like, Apple didn't get any repercussions on the battery recall, whereas Dell did.
Well, and I think the really puzzling thing with that one is that Dell's recalled and Apple's recalled. The batteries are all made by Sony, and Sony hasn't recalled.
And they also, the other vendors are saying that it's not a problem, and who knows where it's all going to go. I know there's lots of other people who will leave them to talk about that as opposed to us. But it's just examples about that communication. And when the government, I think, stepped in and said, no, this will be the last one, when Dell did it, everything's going to be fine. Then the next thing you know, Apple does it, and then now all of a sudden everybody's going, well, is this going to happen? How's it going to work on this one? And crazy. Well, Mip, thank you very much. I appreciate you.
Always a pleasure
doing
to be here and kicking back with a cup of coffee.
Yeah. So thanks, Starbucks at Bayview Village. Hopefully the music isn't too bad in the background. But thanks, and have a great long weekend, everybody. And thanks a lot, Mip.
Talk to you later.
For more information about Project X, please join us on our website at www.pxltd.ca. Or hop on our blog and join in the conversation at pxltd.typepad.com. This is a copyright of Project X Limited. Thank you for joining us today.